Boston became known as the hub in the colonial period.
Can't you feel it out in Needham now? Out in Route 128.
Citizens, hear me out.
Hey, little Boston! Are you ready?
Hey, I'm Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, and we're broadcasting live from the Sunday Cafe in Somerville, Massachusetts. It's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and the Sunday Cafe. How are you guys doing? This is unbelievable. It's the middle of the night, and I don't know if they're here for us or just free coffee. It's hard to tell, but they're excited. They're getting jacked up. There's someone brought down a million coffee cakes. It's the Boston Coffee Cake Company at www.bostoncoffeecake.com. I've had 6 pieces, a Dunkin' Donuts coffee, and a Sunday Cafe coffee, so I'm about to explode, Riley.
Yeah, I know.
I'm exploding. Cortisol is coursing through my brains right now from this stuff.
Is that from the coffee cake or from the coffee?
Maybe it's from the... I just snorted 2 Splenda packets.
Oh, that'll do it. That'll definitely do it.
So we're here. We're in Boston. I already ate at Red Bones. I'm going to go back today twice. Yeah, one Red Bones fan. I'm like, I couldn't help myself. I used to live 3 blocks from here. I have no idea. I lived here for like 7 years on and off. I have no recollection of what I did here. That's how good a time I had. I do remember I wrecked a car about 4 blocks from here. How'd you like to hear that story? That's a good story. Yeah. Should I get into that right away? My drinking problem?
Go ahead.
I don't know. It's great to be back, man. Tonight I'm going to be over at the Somerville Theater on Jimmy Tingle's show at the Off-Broadway Theater. That should be great. There, I saw Barry Crimmins and a bunch of guys last night. They're all going to be on the show. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited that there are people here. Aren't you, Riley?
Yeah, I am extremely excited. Look at all the love in the room here this morning.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful.
I have to be honest. I did go to a Dunkin' Donuts coffee at 4:30 in the morning to get the first coffee, and I used to work at a place in Harvard Square at the old garage called the Coffee Connection, and I had forgotten what it's like to wait for coffee or to have people wait for coffee. When I worked at the Coffee Connection, it had one of those roll-down gates, and people would sit there. If we were 1 minute off, they'd start rattling the gate. Like, come on! Don't you realize this is addiction? Please, help us! And sure enough, I'm down there with Kent the Colonel Jones at the Dunkin' Donuts, and it's 4:30, and she's just in there acting like we don't even exist. And I'm like, this is crazy, man. Doesn't she understand where I'm at right now? And certainly, by 4:40, I'm like, come on now. And then I felt like I was going to be mad at her, and then you realize, wait a minute, she's at Dunkin' Donuts at 4:30 in the morning. How happy could she be?
Yeah, right. You were about to rattle the cage, buddy.
I did rattle
you
the cage.
You did. You ah, yeah. Help me.
Yeah, exactly.
Help me, man.
Yeah. And she was like, please, I have children. What's wrong with you?
So, you got me back on the sauce, too, man. I just wanted
you
to
act, But you act like you just slipped on blow or something. You know,
hey.
Riley's looking at me like, oh, no, I'm in trouble. It's coffee.
I know it's coffee, but I was off coffee all week, and now we come to a nice coffee cafe here, and the smell just drove me to it.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
It's always the smell.
Yeah. But it's great. I mean, this is great coffee.
You just said that. Just give me a taste.
Yeah.
Just give me a taste. Yeah.
Now my hands stop shaking.
All right, so let's talk about how the neocon death cult is ruining our country, shall we?
Yeah.
Can we get right into that? Can we talk about the neocon death cult's Christo-fascist zombie brigades that are now taking over the world? Can we do that? Or do you want to talk about how great blue states are over red states?
Yeah,
which
we got
one?
15 reasons why Massachusetts is a better place to live than Texas.
Texas, of course, the home of the puppet of the neocon death cult, the fake President George Bush. So you want to do it? State sales tax. State sales tax. 6.25% in Massachusetts, 5% in Texas. That's the only good thing, I guess, about Texas. But here we go.
State sales tax in Massachusetts is 5%.
Okay, all right. That would make sense. Thank you for correcting that. Dan, you're fired. Dan Patrick and Son of Lewis and Linda Pass. What?
That wasn't my fact sheet.
Well, you know what? You handed it to me. It's on the piece of paper you gave me. All right, how about this? Families with children beneath the poverty line, 10.1% in Massachusetts, 16.6% in Texas. That's bad. We're winning. Children, yeah, exactly. Children's vaccinations ranking. They're one, more than 80% of the children, it's number one here in Massachusetts. Very good. Number 43 in Texas, 60% to 69% of all children not only vaccinated.
Infant mortality per 1,000 live births. Massachusetts 4.9, that's the fourth lowest in the country. And Texas 6.2, 18th lowest in the country. National ranking of deaths from heart disease. Massachusetts 43rd highest, Texas 17th highest. Percentage of the population with health insurance. This is an important one. Massachusetts, fifth highest in the United States with 87.9%, and Texas, the lowest in the country with 70.3%.
Yeah. Yeah, that's yeah. It.
Percentage
Let's
of people
a little
with
liberal
a
hate
school
going.
Diploma.
Yeah.
This is important.
Yeah.
Massachusetts, 84.8%. Texas, 75.6%.
Hey, smarties. How many people have a high school diploma?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Look at that.
There you go.
Where are the GED people? All right, one. Good. Where are the people that said, you know what, this isn't worth it. I'm not learning anything.
There you go.
All right.
Now, you know, we wouldn't be doing this if we actually had an affiliate in Texas, but and we probably will never get one.
Oh, you know, we've got one guy streaming in Texas like, oh, God, I'm a rebel. I'm winning.
Yeah, right?
It's weird when you get calls. We get calls sometimes from Carolina, from Virginia, and these people literally are talking like, I can't talk too loud because no one can know that I'm listening to Air America on my computer.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a couple of
people. Because they could get fired for it.
We got calls from Texas.
Yeah.
No, we get calls from Texas. I perform in Texas. There's a lot of people that hate Bush, and they know him better than anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot to hate.
Yeah.
Anyway, percent with a college degree. Massachusetts, 33.2%. Texas, 23.2%. 10% lower. Unemployment rate. Massachusetts, 4.6%. Texas, 5.6%. Crimes per 100 people annually. Massachusetts, 3. Texas, 5. Murders per 100,000 people. Remember, Texas has got the death penalty. Massachusetts, 2. Texas, 5.9.
Now, when they execute somebody, does that count as a murder? Do they just throw that on the tally?
No, no,
if
no,
you kill
no.
somebody for killing somebody, does that double? So each one murder is worth two in Texas.
State what? Homicides don't count.
They don't count?
No. That's supposedly sanctioned death.
Oh, okay. So that makes a difference.
Yeah. Divorces. Now, this is important with all of this Christian coalition stuff that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Massachusetts, 2.4. This is divorces per 1,000 people. Massachusetts, 2.4, the lowest rate in the country.
Oh, there's more love here.
Yes.
Texas, people are more committed.
4.1, 26th in the country.
Oh, my God. There's a million coffee cakes in this place.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
this is unbelievable.
The coffee cake gets half gone, and a new plate just magically appears.
Yes, the free food people are here. Come on down if you're anywhere driving and you want to come have free coffee cake, free coffee, and listen to me and Mark ramble on as we continue our show here at the Someday Cafe in Davis Square. We'll be back with an update on the neocon death cults, Christo-fascist zombie brigades after this. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Ask your doctor if morning sedition is right for you. Then listen anyway. Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley over there.
Yes, it is.
We're coming to you live from the Someday Cafe in Davis Square in Somerville.
Yeah.
Come on down if you're in the neighborhood and you're just driving around and it might stop you from doing something bad. Come down. If you're just driving around going, I'm going to take care of that guy who's with my ex-girlfriend. Don't do it. Come down here, have some free coffee. We'll talk you down. There's Boston Coffee Cake has given us, I think, no less than 177 coffee cakes. So there's plenty of coffee cake here. We're just waiting for the first wave of people to go into a sugar coma, and then we'll slowly walk them out and make room for whoever else comes down. So make sure you do that. Come down, please, and we'll give you a free keychain. I'll sign your shirt.
Yeah.
I think Riley...
there's plenty of swag here, man.
That's
they brought
right.
serious swag.
But didn't you say something about giving people some money if they came down, or was that... No,
no man, that was your money.
All right, there you go. So let's
while supplies
this.
Last, folks.
Dig this, dude. Canada's? No, it wouldn't be Canada's, would it? It's Canada, isn't it, folks? Yeah,
yes.
I know how to read. Canada's Supreme Court ruled Thursday that gay marriage was constitutional.
Yes.
This is a landmark. a landmark opinion allowing the federal government to call on Parliament to legalize same-sex unions nationwide. Now, you know that when this story comes out, there's going to be people in small clusters around this country just going, oh, no, North America is going to fall into a sinkhole. That one's going to drag us into hell. But you know what? Clearly, it's not. Have you been to Canada, Mark?
Yes, I've been to Canada. And, you know, this ruling by the Canadian High Court indicates that they're at a level of civilization that some parts of our country are not yet at.
Yes.
Period.
Yes.
I mean, this is the way it should be.
Yes.
And by the way, the Canadian population, if you look at the polling, is about evenly split on same-sex marriage, unlike America, where the polls tell us that a majority of people oppose same-sex marriage.
Who took those polls?
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know for what purpose, and I don't understand what the problem is. You know, it's what you do, not who you do. It's as simple as that.
It's weird. Canada is just like America, only without the perpetual fear and hate that this country seems to suffer from. And it actually rains free medication there. When you go to Canada, Prozac falls out of the sky. It's a miracle. Everyone can have it. You just pick it up off the streets. And it's in bowls at coffee shops. But the thing about this is that, you know, it's a tremendous example. The weird thing about Canada is you go up there, everything is so safe, it's so nice, and cities look just like American cities, but as I said, you don't have that weird fear and hate, which actually takes the edge off a little bit. I mean, I like it here, where you kind of, like, see, look what's going on, an ambulance is going by, and you're like, what's happening there? Something bad happened. And that's exciting. That's what makes America great.
You know, I'm not quite sure how the religious right in this country is going to react to this, because my guess is that they will try and do something with Canadian right organizations to try and change this.
You think so?
Yeah, absolutely. Dobson and people like that, they can't stand to see stuff like this, even if it's not in their country.
There's a mass email campaign writing to gay people right now in Canada being done by the Christian right saying, you heathen!
Yeah, right. Yeah. Be straight, please.
Yeah. But there's more stories coming out of this. There's not just the gay marriage issue in Canada, but right now there is the White House is supporting the freedom or the law or they want to allow the Ten Commandments displayed in public and government property.
Why does this have to be done publicly?
Yeah.
I grew up believing that religion was like a private thing between you and God.
Yeah.
Why does it have to be public? Why does it have to be everywhere? It doesn't have to be everywhere. When you do this sort of thing, it disrespects other religions that are here in this country. I mean, I'm sure Boston being a cosmopolitan city, there are probably more than 100 different religions represented in this city alone. New York, the same thing. So you want to lean everything on Christianity to the exclusion of everybody else? That's insane.
Yeah, well, it's done. Yeah, there you go. Vote Riley in 2008.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me that the justices will hear arguments probably in February in the county's appeal, and in the second case, there's two cases. One is involving a Texas homeless man, Thomas Van Orden, who wants a 6-foot granite monument removed from the state capitol grounds so he can continue sleeping there without the pressure. Is that wrong?
I don't know, but it's funny. This is the Bush administration, again, cozying up to the worst elements of organized right-wing religion in this country. That's what he's doing. He knows, you know, he's been hearing since the election that these are the people that put him over. So he's going to start taking these positions. And by the way, watch in the next 4 years Bush start to contradict some of the positions he took during his first term, simply to kowtow to these people.
Well, you know, my fear has always been that eventually that the Christo-fascist zombie brigades will start recruiting. There's a big fear that one of the liberal reactions to religious suppression by the Christian minority that's trying to propagandize everything we deal with on a day-to-day basis is that eventually we're going to be corralled into camp somehow, and be forced to wear little, Christ armbands. And, I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen.
I don't know if it'll happen in our lifetimes. But look, I am a Christian, okay?
Yeah.
I go to church.
Mm-hmm.
I take offense at people trying to define my religion for me or how I should live my life. I've decided that I'm old enough to do it, and I've done it. And I'm sure everybody in this room has done it.
Yeah.
So what's the problem? Why does somebody else have to do this for us? Why does somebody else have to say, well, you can't watch this in the privacy of your own home? Why does somebody have to say to us, you have to be able to see religion manifested in public places, public lands? Why?
Well, one of the reasons is it makes, when everybody's the same, people are easier to talk to. You know what I mean?
They're easier to lead by the nose.
No point in time do you go, whoa, that's crazy, because everybody thinks the same.
But you know what? You know, I don't know about, well, you don't have kids yet, but I've raised my daughter who's only 7.
Yes.
But she already questions things.
Yeah.
I believe that children should be encouraged to question everything.
Yeah.
I was, even though, you know, sometimes my mother used to go upside my head for questioning too much. That's the way of the world, all right? But you can't snuff that out.
Yeah.
Of children or out of adults, because once you have people that are too willing to conform, you have the seeds of the kind of fascism that we saw sweep through Europe during the 19th. You know, Germany wasn't the only fascist place in Europe during the 30s and early 40s. There was Spain, there was Italy, there were all these different places who thought that way of doing things, total subservience to a state mentality. And by the way, and somebody pointed this out on our air the other day, in Germany, it was not the separation of church and state that created the problem. It was the merger of church and state. There was an official religion in Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
It wasn't that they separated and said, well, religion cannot exist.
Yeah.
They said, we will define for you what religion is. And that's the same thing we see these people doing now here.
Well, listen to this. The Vatican is pressing the United Nations to recognize Christianophobia as an evil equal to that of anti-Semitism or Islamophobia. Christianophobia. Now, see, I have to be honest. I have that a little bit. You know, I can't lie to you that, you know, maybe it's because I was brought up a Jewish guy with, you know, really no, you know, being middle-class Jewish guy, Dan Pashman, son of Louis and Linda Pashman. It's not like you're given God or you're given anything other than this weird pressure to learn some prayers you don't understand to make a few bucks when you're 13. But I at this point, it's not that I have anything against Christians, but there's a certain type of Christian that scares me a little bit, you know, and that, like, I've had people, like, people who have that look in their eye, that sort of glazed look, like the guy looking at me right now a little bit. I know that's just coffee. I know there's a fine line between coffee and Christ, but you know, and I have that. You know, see, that's where. Are you okay? You're not going to shoot me, are you? All right, hey, how you doing? The some guy just went to the bathroom. He's wearing a hat. He's not. Is he still looking at me? Yeah. The I'm kidding, man.
You want a car? You want a car? Okay.
Well,
Mary, he stole your hat, man.
Did he steal my hat? Is that mine? My wife is, like, so freaked out. I have a weird sort of obsession with acrylic and wool beanies just like that. And my wife hates
what I wear. He changed his mind about the bathroom.
I feel like I was making a point about fanatical Christians. We got to go. Should I do it when we come back? Where are we at with this?
Yeah.
Is that what's going on?
Okay.
We got, yeah?
Yeah, we'll do it when we come back.
And I'm going to talk to that guy. He's got a problem.
You're
outside? You want to meet me outside?
I want to hear music, but you don't have any.
Well, that's because we're doing a radio show.
We can sing if you'd like.
Thanks for the buzzkill. It's not so easy, is it? Huh? All right, funny guy. We'll see you in a minute outside. I'll be out there in about 2 hours. We're back in a minute on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
We're back. It's Morning Sedition. We are here at the Someday Cafe in Davis Square in Somerville. It's 34 past the hour. That's Mark Riley there.
Good morning.
I'm Mark Maron. We're all getting high on coffee cake and free coffee. There's some hipsters playing poker right in front of me. How did poker trickle down to you guys? You guys don't look like poker players. That doesn't seem right.
That's how they're financing their education, man. Leave them alone.
But they're gambling for, like, you know, cigarettes and coffee cake. You know what was hilarious is a few minutes ago, Dan Pashman, son of Louis and Linda Pashman, we had about 30 or 40 people here, and his aunt and uncle walk in, and because of the way they approach him, I go, oh, that must be Dan's aunt and uncle. And his aunt goes, who else would get up at this hour? And I'm like, well, look around. There's about 30. Yeah, that's all right. They came down. So we got Joe, who is the brother of Linda Pashman. Is that right, Dan? We're just adding to the Pashman mythology. So last night, in the middle of the night, Ramon knocks on my door. He's like,
"Oh, he's up here."
Yeah, I can't.
Oh,
I can't get down to the coffee shop. There's too many people. So today we have a Colin Powell's Palm Pilot. Here's the schedule for Colin Powell today: 6 a.m. Wake up in Brussels. Note: What's this strange feeling? Oh, right, the respect of my peers. I forgot what that was like.
10 a.m., meeting. Reach out to Europe seeking their help in Iraq. Note, ignore diplomats snickering and coughing obscenities into their fists. 1 p.m., discuss Bush's upcoming visit to Europe in February. Ask dignitaries if it would be okay if Bush rolled into each capital city in a tank. And if that doesn't work, maybe he could just conference call Europe. 3 p.m., strongly deny Russian claim that the U.S. is interfering in the Ukrainian elections. Tell them, when would we have time? We've got our own elections to fix. Hello? 5 p.m., observe Human Rights Day. Note, this differs from the usual Bush administration policy of overlooking Human Rights Day. 7 p.m., choose title for a tell-all memoir. How about A Man Among Morons? Scapegoat Like Me. Or Lies I've Heard and Told. 10 p.m., ponder possible career options. Run for governor of New York or move to Paris and play jazz. That'd be kind of cool, wouldn't it?
It would be cool.
Sitting in on sex.
Colin Powell.
So thanks again for the coffee cake from Boston Coffee Cake. It seems to be working.
Yeah.
I've leveled off. Man, at the beginning, I was like, wah! So now, I was talking about panicky, or not panicky, but fundamental Christians who, I have to make this differentiation because I don't want to alienate all Christians, just the whack jobs. Is that all right? And I've had issues. The weird thing, the scary thing is that, you know, if you're sensitive and open-minded and vulnerable on any given day, and you come into your contact with a religious fanatic who's dead set on taking your soul with them, you got to be careful because you might just go. You know, I had this incident happen when I was in the subway in New York City once, and about hundreds of kids converged from these smaller red state areas to actually save souls in New York. And this little clean, very nice-looking teenager person comes up to me and just, you know, gets right in my face. And they can sense it. You know, like dogs can only hear that whistle. Certain types of Christians can sense your need and vulnerability and panic and despair. And they'll focus right in on you. And this kid just comes up to me and goes, "Have you taken Jesus into your heart?" And I'm like, "No, I haven't." He goes, "Would you like to?" And I'm like, I don't know. Would it help? And how long would I have to keep them in there? What if I feel better tomorrow? How can I just get them out of there? And then, like usual, they got frightened and ran away from me. But so are we moving on to Iraq? Where are we going here?
Well, did we finish the Christianophobia thing?
No, let's do the Christianophobia thing. Let's continue talking about that. Because now, I guess the Vatican, what do you make of this, Riley? Are they trying to pander to our Christians here who are crazy?
No, I think this is political.
Yes.
All right? This is the Vatican we're talking about.
Yeah.
The Vatican that has overseen the payment of double-digit millions of dollars to settle sexual harassment and abuse claims all over the world.
And because of that, people in the Boston area can live in churches.
Yes. And live in peace, finally.
Now you can finally get that condo with an altar here in Boston, thanks to the sexual harassment lawsuits and sexual abuse lawsuits.
Yeah, and to me, the idea that there's a certainly in Europe and in America, Christianophobia is a little whack. Now, certainly, when it comes to some of the nations of the Middle East, there's a problem.
Yeah.
Because they see this invasion in religious terms. They see the U.S., a Christian country as defined by our president, invading a Muslim country as defined by themselves.
Yeah.
And now there's a situation where they, in many instances, see any Christian, any attempt at Christianizing that region or even the Christians that live within that region, because quiet as it's kept, the entire Middle East does have small pockets of Christian population. Those people are at risk. We don't even talk about that because the Muslims that live in this area see the invasion as a Christian. Remember, they gave Bush a lot of heat about using the word crusader. Not because they don't like the term crusader, but because it evokes a distant past when Christians did, in fact, overrun that area and they called themselves crusaders. That's the problem. So when they look at this and they look at it in religious terms, yes, they have a problem with the kind of Christianity that led to the invasion of their country. Remember, Massachusetts has a 4.6% unemployment rate. Iraq has a 70% unemployment rate. And again, you know, when people can't make a living, you'd be surprised what they tend to hate.
But let's be honest. I mean, you know, on some level, this administration is, you know, kind of doing a crusade. It is a Christian-based war on some level. I mean, George Bush panders to people that funnel money into Jewish extremist groups that want to, you know, get rid of all of the Muslims in Jerusalem so they can rebuild the Second Temple so Jesus' airship can land.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I mean, it's not so far-fetched, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, I think that on some level this president has religified the war to a certain people in this country, and that I'm not saying that this justifies the Vatican necessarily, but it's sort of weird to me, the language, in that they say, you know, Christianophobia and Islamophobia, but anti-Semitism.
Yeah. Well, see, I don't understand exactly what they're trying to accomplish here, except to include Christianity among groups of religions that people tend to hate for whatever reasons. Now, you know, whether they should be there or not may be a separate question, but why bring it up? Why in this context bring it up? And by the way, Kofi Annan just the other day hosted a conference, and I can't remember where it was or where it was being held, but a conference on Islamophobia.
Yeah.
Which you will find occasionally in this country, the most tolerant of countries.
That conference is actually held in a coffee shop around the corner from me in Queens. There's a lot of limos. I'm like, what's going on? They're like, Kofi Annan's here. Smoking a hookah with some major Islamic leaders right here in this coffee shop in Queens.
Well, my God.
I got his autograph. It was cool.
Yeah. Now, on to Iraq.
But wait a second. I just realized something.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, is it possible that the Vatican is pandering to this administration? Because Bush did go there. You know, he looked uncomfortable when he was there. And, you know, honestly, if Christianophobia, the type of Christianity that is trying to usurp our government, they try to play themselves off as victims constantly. And they try to, you know, make themselves, you know, look bigger than they really are. So on some level, I don't know if this is the Vatican pandering to the administration or whether or not we should really be frightened and that eventually, you know, they're going to come with the cross armbands and little Ten Commandments patches and the little medals for gay bashing. You know, they're going to come get us.
Hey, you know, the archbishop that brought this Christianophobia thing up says, and this is a quote, "It should be recognized that the war on terrorism, even though necessary, had as one of its side effects the spread of Christianophobia in vast areas of the globe." Now, what's interesting about that is, remember that the Pope came out against the war in Iraq, but here's one of his archbishops saying that the war on terror is necessary. It's a very interesting distinction that they're making, and I think you're right. It speaks to them trying to at least mend some fences with the Bush administration, because the reason why Bush looks so uncomfortable at the Vatican
is because he is uncomfortable.
He is uncomfortable, and remember that the Pope restated his opposition to the war in Iraq in front of Bush.
Right.
So that's the reason why a lot of this tension between the United States and the Vatican exists. And you see maybe them trying to mend these fences. And, of course, they're saying this in the context of the United States. There's a substantial minority in this country that hate the United Nations. Would just as soon, as a matter of fact, one guy wanted Kofi Annan fired, and they want the UN to move out of the United States, move out of New York.
Yeah, they hate the United Nations. They just rather our president make decisions without wavering, even in the face of truth, reality, or reason.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's it. Tremendous. Huh? So when we come back, we'll deal with Rumsfeld, who speaks in some sort of cryptic code. What the hell is with that guy? You know, I'm going to read you something that I can't even figure out looking at it written on the paper, right, that he stumbled through yesterday in response to a soldier's request for, you know, information that had to do with their lives. And also they tried to spin this whole event yesterday that took place as somehow being coerced by the press. These guys are evil bastards. The neocon death cult. When we come back, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. It's more than just a commute companion. Listen online at morningsedition.com when you get to work, courtesy of Air America Radio.
Hey, how's it going? We're back. 49 after the hour, you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're coming to you live from the Someday Cafe in Davis Square in Somerville. We now officially have our first dancing woman in the audience.
There
welcome.
You go.
Yay. Yay. There she is. So, hey, thank you for
coming.
All right, baby. Okay. I have no idea what that's in reference to, but thanks for coming down. 15 years, whatever you got. You get a free T-shirt because I know that's what you want. And also, where are we at? Oh, you know what time it is right now, Mark Riley?
Yeah.
It's time for Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
Oh, yeah. A cop says they're America's dumbest criminals, and he's probably right. Of course, dumb criminals always catch our Dog of the Week radar. John Douglas Sheets and Misty Ann Holmes, ages 18 and 17 respectively, live in Florida's panhandle. According to police, these geniuses came back to the home they shared to find there was a break-in and a quarter pound of marijuana missing.
Mm.
Okay. Any dealer with half a brain knows you write that quarter pound off. Well, not this pair. They did what a normal crime victim would do. They called the cops. That's right. Sheets and Holmes called the police and told them not only was their reefer gone, but that they needed it back. Why? Well, why don't dealers normally need their drugs? That's right. To sell them. And that's just what they told the cops. Even dumber, the pair let the detectives search their house. Even though their stash was gone, cops found what they described as several marijuana stems and drug paraphernalia. Oh, yeah. The thief apparently left that behind. It was enough to charge John Douglas Sheets and Misty Ann Holmes with possession with intent to deliver and possession of drug paraphernalia. These two obviously smoke way too much of their own product. They're drying out in jail, each being held on more than $17,000 bond. Without the reefer, they're never going to get out of jail. So, John and Misty, before you light up that next joint, take heart. You may be idiots, but you're much more than that. You are the Morning Sedition Dogs of the Week.
How high do you got to be, man?
I don't know, man. It's either
Dude,
weed or coffee. I don't
Dude,
know.
This is pot's gone. Call the cops. If you smoke enough reefer, you actually think that there's no, you get to that point where it's like, how could this possibly be illegal? And then at some point, you cross the next line where it's not. It's just not. Not in our house.
Yeah.
The hell with that.
And what kind of thought process, once they realized it was gone and the cops were there, well, go ahead, search the house. We don't have anything else here. They took everything. But of course not.
God. I used to smoke a little pot myself back in the day, Riley. Yeah, and you know,
I'm maintaining silence. I'm recusing myself from the rest of this discussion. My kid listens to this show.
Well, when you're submerged in the reefer, then you cross a certain line where you just like you light up in public, and then someone's standing there with you, and they're like, "What the hell are you doing?" I'm like, "What do you mean?
Personal use, man. Yeah, personal use.
Doesn't everybody do that? No, they don't. You got a problem. Yeah, well, the hell with you, man. I'll do it at home when no one bothers me, except for the voices in my head.
Now, Marin.
Yes, sir.
You know that they were going to try and discredit that soldier that spoke to Donald Rumsfeld the other day.
Right.
No, they were going to do this.
Yeah.
So what do? Now they find out that apparently a reporter helped this particular, I believe his name is Thomas Wilson, helped him get that question about the armor to Donald Rumsfeld.
Right. A military reporter that was
embedded with the troops.
Well, why would they try to spin it like that? Clearly, this reporter had to use military tactics just to get a question to the people that are in charge of this thing. He literally had to tell the guy, you know, please, you should really ask him this. We should get together on this, because if we don't ask him a pointed question, he's just going to babble on like he always does.
Yeah.
So it's like it was good that the reporter told the guy
to ask
a question.
It's a sad commentary on the U.S. military. That in order to get a legitimate issue addressed, remember, not all of these guys are zombies. When this guy asked Rumsfeld that question, the entire room of soldiers erupted in applause. They knew what he was talking about. They're not fools.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, now they're trying to... What's his name? Gets on. I can't even form my lips to say his name. That fat guy that's on one of these. Him. Whatever. He sits up there saying, oh, it's all contrived. No, it's not contrived. When you get blown up, that's not contrived. I'm sorry.
No, what he did say, I think, was also that this reporter obviously got into this soldier's head and manipulated him. Like, if a reporter can out-manipulate the crap that the Marines put in this guy's head, that's a hell of a reporter. And, you know, he should actually be given a medal of some kind just to get a question to, you know, one of the significant designers of the neocon death cult's agenda. Now, let's just talk about the way Rumsfeld handles questions. This is a quote from Rumsfeld, and I've read it three times, people. Three times. Dig this, right? Quote, I don't know what the facts are, but somebody's certainly going to sit down with him and find out what he knows that they may not know, and make sure he knows what they know that he may not know. And that's a good thing. really? It doesn't make any sense.
That's Rumsfeld 316, folks.
I think it's a very constructive exchange.
Yeah. He's a genius. He is a genius.
Riley got a fan back there.
Yes.
There's a lady, that the dancing lady, who got a free T-shirt and now wants to take Riley home.
Uh-oh. You have to say hi to the wife and child.
Now she's clinging to the man that she's with and hopes
yes,
to...
Yes, yes, she's with her old man. Thank you, Mary.
That's terrific. Now we're hoping Riley doesn't die by the end of the... It's always good to have the people come on down. We should open the studio up, Larson. And,
yeah. Of course, they'd never get past our sleeping security downstairs.
So the real issue here is that these troops are under-equipped. They have been under-equipped since the beginning of the war, and that the problem is ongoing.
Yes.
And yet these the neocon death cult keeps playing lip service to the fact that they are doing everything they can to equip this army. And even the other day, on Wednesday when this happened, Rumsfeld says, you get the army you want, not the army. You know, you can't have the army you want. You get the army you need. And these guys are under the impression that this is the best army in the world, yet they have to, you know what they need? There was a statement by this guy who said that they got to go to scrap heaps to armor the Humvees properly. And I think that this could all be solved if maybe they should just fly those guys from American Chopper and Monster Garage, you know, into Iraq, and those guys will do it for a toolbox. And they could equip all of these Humvees if it takes that, if the government's not willing to put the money in the right place.
The question people need to ask themselves is, why weren't these pieces of equipment properly armored before they got to Iraq? Fixing it up is all well and good. Saying they're trying to do it as fast as they can is all well and good. But if you've got the most modern, most powerful army in the world, why wasn't it done beforehand? Simple as that.
Because the money was going to the wrong place. You know? It was going to the wrong place.
Into the wallets of Bush's donors.
And exactly. And yesterday, Rumsfeld was actually rationalized it by saying, hey, look, even if you're in an armored car, that doesn't mean you're not going to get blown up.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then, you know, forget it. That's cool. You know, we'll just take our helmets off, too, and walk through the desert naked. Very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, and there's a bigger scandal coming when they start realizing that regular army troops are better equipped than the reserves and the National Guard.
Hey, there's the fax machine that nobody here can see. But don't tell the people at home that it's not a real fax machine. Here's today's liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Write these down, folks. These are your marching orders. One, suggest we actually paint this state blue. Two, replace Patriot Act with New England Patriots Act. Including the Tom Brady bill. Three, Dukakis and Kerry in 2008. Anyone? No? All right. Four, demand the U.S. establish full diplomatic ties with Red Sox Nation. Five, when talking about Bush in Boston, use the phrase, one curse down, one to go. We'll be back. What do we got? We got Barney Frank coming up. We got the mayor of Somerville coming up. We got Barry Crimmins, Jimmy Dingle.
Yeah.
We got Ted Leo later in the show. We'll be back. This is Air America Radio.
In the course of our nation's history, the people of Boston have rallied bravely whenever the rights of men have been threatened.
Boston became known as the hub in the colonial period.
Can't you feel it out in Needham now? Out in Route 128.
Citizens, hear me out.
I don't know Boston! Are you ready?
Hey, I'm Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, and we're broadcasting live from the Someday Cafe in Somerville, Massachusetts. It's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course, everybody here at the Someday Cafe. Some people are here for the show, others just here because it's warm.
It's freaking cold out there!
What's that, buddy?
It's freaking cold
Thank you for sharing.
You
that was really worth yelling for. Hey, I'm kidding, man. I appreciate it. That's the poker player. Dealt me a couple of hands. I got nothing. I'm the most unlucky gambler in the world. Anyways, thanks, Boston Coffee Cake, www.bostoncoffeecake.com. For the no less than 2,000 coffee cakes are here. We built a secondary. We built an addition to this coffee shop out of coffee cakes. So if you're driving by, you should see that right on the Somerville on Davis Square, and feel free to take a coffee cake with you. Apparently, there's pumpkin coffee cake. There's a cinnamon and walnut coffee cake. There's an asparagus coffee cake that's interesting, and not for me, but some people seem to enjoy it. We've got Jimmy Tingle in the wings. We've got Barry Crimmins in the wings. I've got Mark Riley here to my right.
Yeah.
Barney Frank's coming up. Some guy threw this in my face. It's important. There is a rally, a nationwide rally, this Sunday, December 12th. It's noon to 2 o'clock. The one here is at the bandstand on Boston Common. It's a day of protest all over to raise awareness of the 57,000 voting incidents reported to the U.S. Congress to make sure that we have a fair election in the future. So anywhere you are, find out the information in your area. I'm looking for a website, www.caef.us, if you want to get involved with that in your area. Right now... Yes, you can applaud that. That's fine.
Yeah.
She needs to, yeah. It's nice when you have an intimate show, when you're going out to, you know, around the world, people are streaming, and you're literally going, could you just get out of the way so she can go to the bathroom?
Go to the bathroom, really.
You know, so you want to bring everybody in. It's like, wow, they're talking right there, and there's a person going
right
to the...
Yeah.
That's Dan Pashman, son of Louis, Linda Pashman, adjusting the mic. I know you're dying. Get on mic.
Go
say
on,
something.
Go on.
Oh, I don't hear you. I don't hear you.
Nothing.
Hello?
There you go. That's Dan Pashman. So, what's going on? You feel good to be back in Boston?
I'm so pumped to be here, dude. It's my second ever live broadcast from Davis Square.
What does that mean? Are you about to plug your history? Is this part of the myth of Pashman?
The myth of Pashman builds, my friend. And I broadcasted from the Burn about 6 years ago.
Wow, back in the day.
Back when I was a student at a little place called Tufts University.
He didn't graduate, so they threw him out.
Some of you might have heard of it.
So you're having fun?
Oh, I'm having a great time. Is everyone out there having a good time? Yeah, I'm totally
pumped. Are there any Pashman rules around eating coffee cake, or did we transgress?
Just keep eating it.
Okay.
But if the only Pashman rule on that.
People
on that
are starting
front.
To crash. Let's get Tingle out here.
Yeah,
my first guest is, you might know him from around here. You might know him from his brilliant comedy for the years that I've known him, like no less than 20 or so. 25 years, apparently, right, Jimmy? He's going to be tonight. He's got Jimmy Tingle's off-Broadway theater right down the street. We're celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Ding Ho, which we'll tell you a little bit about. Last night, you know, I ran into this is Jimmy Tingle, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
thank you. Thanks, Mark.
Sure, man. I walked into Redbones last night. Gavin's there, George McDonald, Kenny Rogers, and Crimmins shows up. I was so excited. Those are the guys that were there when I first started.
That's right.
They were running the place. George McDonald used to have that open mic at Stitches where I'd go on and bomb for years. It was horrible. Three people in the room just shouting at the one guy that doesn't even know why he's there. Oh. Those were the glory days. Remember when he used to do the satellite gigs around Boston? I did a gig at Cranston, Rhode Island in a bowling alley. Those are the high points of my career.
Yeah. Was the hockey game on behind you?
Do you know what was on behind me? Bowling to the oldies. All right, you go. I'm doing comedy in the bar, and there's people out there with their lights dimmed, you know, throwing gutter balls to Wooly Bully.
Right. When you first start, you do any gig, you know, we would work any of these places around here. Open mic nights, gong shows. Personally, I did, you know, house parties, wherever people would come together, a car accident, wherever people came together.
Hey, don't cry. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. I actually did street performing when I first started, and I do admit there was a fine line between street performing and simply being drunk in public. I admit that.
I remember you at the Ding Ho. Now, the Ding Ho, explain to people what that was, because it's sort of a seminal mythic place in Boston comedy.
Barry Crimmins was coming up after me, and he can probably describe it in greater detail. But anyway, he was the founder of the Ding Ho. But anyway, the Ding Ho was a Chinese restaurant in Inman Square, Cambridge.
Yeah,
that developed into a comedy club. Barry Crimmins taught the owner and Chung Lee into allowing him to do comedy shows. So he started this comedy club in 78, 79, and all these great comics, budding, aspiring comics started showing up. Steve Wright and Dennis Leary and Lenny Clark and Steve Sweeney and Paula Poundstone, and this whole scene started developing.
Wow, 78, that was like seven then.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I used to go, Bobby. Oh. Cheryl.
Oh, how you doing?
Blackwood.
Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you.
I grew up with him.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Thanks for coming in, Cheryl.
All right.
Anyway, Cheryl was there, and a lot of people were there when we first started. And it was in Miss Quinn. It was just a scene that developed. And all these great, you know.
School.
That's right. Longfellow School. That's where we went to school.
Right.
And it was, and that would have the ding hole got me off the corner where we used to hang around at Longfellow School.
Okay.
And I was a daytime bartender there, and yeah. Clemens hired me, and I worked for Clemens.
Yeah.
And they fed me in rice and beer. That's how they paid me at the ding hole. And I went right from the ding hole to rehab. And it was a beautiful thing.
I don't know, but I feel a radio show. You and Cheryl, maybe?
No.
Okay.
She seems real emphatic about it.
Okay.
I got a question for Jimmy.
I love to hear people from this region say Bobby.
Yeah.
Bobby. It's great.
I got a question for Jimmy.
Bobby.
There you go.
Yeah, I know it is. Okay.
Jimmy, what makes Boston unique among cities for comedy? I know that San Francisco has a particular reputation.
Yeah.
New York kind of sort of only had the improv for a long time.
Yeah.
What makes Boston so unique?
I think one of the things is you got a very interesting mix of people here. You got the very working class, middle class population here. Plus you have the academics, the students, and the colleges. And it comes down to a nice mix of the kind of the very educated classes, the intelligentsia, the academic element, and then you got just regular people, and there's a nice mix there, and the audiences really make the place tremendous. The audiences in Boston are fantastic.
And no one has worked harder to bridge that gap other than Barry Crimmins.
That's
you know,
right.
Who we're going to bring on in just a second. Jimmy Tingle, Barry Crimmins in a second. Air America Radio, we'll see you on the other side of this.
And it's just a lot of funny people.
All right.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less on Air America Radio.
Right, we're back. It's 19 past the hour. Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're coming to you live from the Someday Cafe in Davis Square where everybody is getting wasted on coffee cake. Way too much coffee cake, but thank you to, where's that? What are they? Oh, hi, what the? Yay, Boston coffee cake. Thank you for all the many different flavors. Jimmy Tingle's here, Barry Crimmins in a second, but right now, I didn't go to therapy today, so I'm going to have to share my dream diary with you people. This is last night's dream. I'm in the junior high school classroom with my dead cat, Butch. She says, good morning, my pubescent comrades. The name of this class is Abstinence and Hygiene. Just say no to sex. Everyone snickered, and one kid in the back made a fart noise with his armpit. Butch said, you're right to mock my lustful protégés, because I am here to tell you that denying your sexuality is like peeing into a hurricane. Wet, but I'm satisfied. One 12-year-old kid asked, is it really that important? My mom says she hasn't had it in years. Butch said, comrades, the only thing that relieves the unrelenting tedium of our meaningless existence is sex. Giving up sex is like giving up Eric Bernays sauce, or giving up a drive-by shootings, or giving up injecting a mixture of cocaine and heroin into the veins between your toes. It is unthinkable. A boy with bad acne says, so why do grown-ups tell us not to have sex? Butch says, adults despise you because your penis works. And says, do not. Jealousy is the cruelest mistress of all. Another kid raises her hand and says, if you're so against abstinence, why are you teaching this class? Butch said, to stick it to the man, of course. The man hired me because I convinced him that I myself practice abstinence, but I did not tell him was that I stopped practicing abstinence when I was 4 weeks old. I lost it to a filthy Persian behind a dumpster. It was glorious, and I've been making magnificent obscene love ever since, and so should you. You're not getting any younger, you know. One kid says, shouldn't we save ourselves from marriage? Butch says, abstain from boredom! Abstain from conformity! Abstain from the cruel lie called God! But do not abstain from commingling your fiery young loins or from smoking cigarettes. Please have a cigarette, they're delicious. Butch gave every kid in the class a Marlboro and then lit one herself. One kid coughed and says, when should we smoke? Butch exhaled and said, I must tell you, smoke after sex and before sex and sometimes during sex. Now leave me. Go make love with many inappropriate strangers. Break your hearts and suddenly
I am now very tired.
I woke up and my bed was filled with lobster rolls.
Nice, nice.
I'm working on the French accent. Jimmy Tingle is here, and now also joining Jimmy Tingle. These guys have known each other for probably, what, 50 years?
Yeah.
Barry Crimmins is with us. Give it up for Barry Crimmins.
Yeah. Yes, Barry.
Thank you. Thank you.
He's holding his new book. That the book is doing very well. What's that book called there, Bear?
It's called... Is this...
Yeah, you're good.
It's called Never Shake Hands with a War Criminal.
And it's essays, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Words to live by. But I'm here for another purpose this morning. I'm with the Hamster Liberation League.
Oh, thank God you guys came.
And we must free the poor animals who are being forced to power the signal of Air America in the Boston area. And we are not leaving. Doors are barred. It's peaceful up until now.
They're in that generator box right downstairs. Right. You can hear them crying for food, which we can't give them.
That's right. That's right. And they don't like coffee cake, as it turns out. So.
But thank God they like coffee if you starve them enough.
That's right. Well, yeah. Well, that AIV helps with that as well.
But it's hard to get those needles in the little hamster arms, isn't it?
Great. That's right.
Sorry, Bear. So tell us about the beginning of the Ding Ho. I didn't realize that you started the Ding Ho. And I performed there like three or four times as an open micer. Right. After I remember Lenny Clark said, "This next guy just started now, Mark Maron," and then he did an hour and a half and brought me up.
Exactly. What was I bringing up? I came to Boston and there was not much comedy going on, and I knew comedy. I'd been around the country working, and I knew that comedy would take up. And I saw one show in Boston, and I saw what talent there was here, and I just knew we needed a place. And then I saw that they had done a show at this Ding Ho, at the Springfield Street Saloon, and it was to become the Ding Ho. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't figure out why they wouldn't use that room all the time. And so I went over. I ended up being the doorman there for one night, and the Chinese guy that ran it loved me, because on the first night I tossed out this local menacing drunk Irish guy.
Uh-huh. In Boston you had to
remarkably enough, one of my people. So I just get out of here, and you go, "They're good," and then somebody else came in and said, "Well, the Ding Ho is just so classic." I would call, I took 0% right off the top. That's my deal.
Which is good in comedy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Well, I mean, you gotta get in early to get that. But I would call the club from out making money at actual gigs. I would call and go, "Hi, this is Barry. What's going on?" And they go, "Barry, not here," and hang up. "Barry, not here." It eventually morphed into "Ding Ho, not here," and that became prophetic. Ding Ho, not here.
It's funny.
Ding Ho at Tingle's Theater, right down the street.
It's going to be a great show. You're on it tonight. Who else is on tonight's show? You,
Jack Gallagher.
I haven't seen him in years. He's so funny.
Head writer for the Conan O'Brien show.
Very funny.
Who else we got? Crimmins, Gallagher.
Tony B. Man, you guys got to go to this show.
Mark Maron's on the bill.
Mark Maron.
Yep.
Mark Maron. Is there still tickets for tonight?
Yeah.
Oh, so we're going to give away a few tickets in a little while.
Yeah.
Barry, the funny... That's for the giveaway. I know who wants to
call her number three.
The funny thing about Crimmins is that, like, when I was in college, I went to college at BU, and you used to host, what was it, Wednesday nights at Stitches?
No, Thursdays and every other Saturday.
It was Thursday nights at Stitches, and you'd have this, like, crowd of about 30 college kids. It was just like, it was during the Reagan administration. I remember every Thursday at some point, about 15 or 20 minutes in, Barry sweating, and he just breaks down and goes, "Okay. There are three branches of government."
There were credit hours available with that show. So that worked out pretty well for a lot of us.
I was just thinking of that joke that I wrote, that Barry Crimmins is trying to appeal to a stupid audience. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Honduran Death Squad.
Honduran Death Squad, who used to work for the current members of this administration who are supposedly in charge of our war on terror. How ironic is that?
Then the door closes. So what do you think? What do you think of Rumsfeld? Did you hear that whole exchange yesterday?
Yeah, Rumsfeld, you know, I don't even know why they bothered to bring the press in. The only questions he answers are his own. Well, why would I do this? Well, of course, let me tell you. I don't know. What do you think? I don't know. Take a pill, Don. Jesus.
He's unbelievable. Yeah. Oh, that man. Response he gave was...
You know, in my, as far as my book's concerned, never shake hands with a war criminal. If he follows those, were, you know, he can't even clasp his own hands together. I've been getting up worrying about that guy for like 30 years now. When is he going to go away? That's what, the same way I feel about those poor soldiers. And imagine you're there for a year, you've done your time, you think you're getting out, and then they pull the handshake. You know, oh damn! I thought I could really relate to them, like being in hell. You know, gee, that's so terrible. How those poor people feel? I can't imagine how they feel. On the morning of November 3rd, I knew exactly how they felt.
Yeah, right. You know my theory, Barry? I think that they're going to let this Iraq war... They're not going to reinstate a draft. They're going to let the Iraq war go on until they completely deplete the government of all its money, funnel it into military contracts, and then they'll be forced to privatize social programs, thus creating such a chasm between rich and poor, they'll actually be able to advertise the army by saying, hungry? Need a place to sleep.
Yeah.
We've got a cot for you in the Army.
No, you
but no flat jacket.
You have to take a small chance to do this, but.
That's so, right. So take
well, a, I think what? All recruiting for the military should be done on the top floor of veterans' hospitals.
Oh, Lord.
Wheel, and make them go through the entire hospital and then see if they want to sign up for the glamour that awaits them. Because I'm sick and tired of living in a country where they would rather create veterans than care for them.
Right. So. See, these are the good. These are. Hey, my cousin James. So I guess we're taking off here for a minute, right, Riley?
We
got the mayor coming up.
Yep.
Curtatone.
Mayor Joe Curtatone. Yes, he's going to be in. We got.
Lawton Smalls is going to be on the phone.
Lawton Smalls. That's right, yeah. Lawton Smalls.
And these guys are leaving, or maybe you're sitting here. Maybe, yeah. Hang on for a minute, Jimmy and Barry.
Yeah,
we'll say goodbye to you on the other side. We'll be back in a minute on Air America Radio.
Yeah.
We're back. It's 34 past the hour. This morning's edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're coming to you from the Sunday Cafe in Davis Square. You can come on down. There's not a lot of room, but there's more coffee cake than there is people here. Yeah, thanks to Boston Coffee Cake, www.bostoncoffeecake.com. Leaving the show right now, Jimmy Tingle, Barry Crimmins, thanks for dropping by, fellas.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Great to see you. Tonight, the show is at Jimmy Tingle's Off-Broadway Theater. Tickets are still available. You can go to jtoffbroadway.com. I'll see you tonight, fellas. Looking forward to it. You take care.
All right, man.
Wow.
All right. Great to meet you, Jimmy.
This is crazy. Look at all these people. It's so nice,
it's
Riley.
It's wonderful, man. Can you feel the love in the room?
And I was sitting at home yesterday going, no one's going to come down.
Yeah, right.
They're not going to come, and they're all here.
He's an eternal optimist.
So right now, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternative universe there. And luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world, and as a special treat, he's joining us here live in the studio today. So join me in welcoming the Boston Planet Bush correspondent, Lawton Smalls.
Good morning, Mark. God's got out a ball-peen hammer, and he's going to nail this in right out of you.
Oh, good. Okay, so what's the matter? I've been wanting to have you join us in person for a while.
Well, it's this place, Mark. I mean, it smells like Beelzebub's coffee shop in here. I wish we could have met face-to-face in a truly American city like Crawford, Texas.
Oh,
but
come on.
I guess you'd feel it more at home at this bottom by the sea in Boston.
Well, actually, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. What is it with you conservatives and all your, like, Massachusetts bashing? What's up
well,
with that?
Well, you know, Mark, I think there's a place for Massachusetts as long as you're a tax-loving, homo-hugging, American-hating, communist Frenchman named Kennedy. All of you are Kennedys, aren't you? I knew it. I knew you were all Kennedys.
Listen to me, buddy. Listen, did you know that Massachusetts has some of the best health care in the country? In fact, more children receive vaccinations here than any other state in the union, my friend. Do you know that?
Oh, well, thanks for quoting the liberal playbook. Okay. Give me a vaccination. Give me a cure to my life-threatening disease. Blah, gimme.
All right, look.
That's all you people know.
Dude, calm down. I might also point out that Massachusetts has the lowest infant mortality rate in the nation, Martin.
Give me.
Come on.
in the nation, the lowest mortality rate. Do you understand? Lowest infant mortality rate. You hear me?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. Infants in this state have that same typical elitist sense of entitlement. Oh, mommy, I'm a baby liberal. I have no idea what super life is. If you just eat me milk from your breast, I'm going to wow to the media. Oh, it makes me sad, Mom.
Oh, man.
Gimme.
You're out of your mind. All right, tell me this, Watton. If Texas
Sodom.
Is a better place to live than Massachusetts, stop doing that. Then how come Texas has a homicide rate that is triple the one in Massachusetts? And how come Massachusetts has the highest education scores in the country?
Mark, there are books that contain figures that refute all of your little statistics.
Oh, really? Well, where are these books, Lawton?
We burned them. Because in red state America, we don't clog up our brains with all your little facts, little blue state facts. In the heartland,
right.
We prefer a simple faith-based life centered on church and family. And automatic weapons.
No, oh, that's
very
great.
Simple.
That's just great. And that brings up another
Bang.
Point. Massachusetts has the lowest divorce rate in the country. Stop doing it.
Well, lowest divorce rate in the country.
Yes.
Well, I hope you're proud of being last.
All right, okay.
So negative.
I don't even know how to respond to that, man.
Mark,
yes.
I know why you're flustered. Because here in Massachusetts, the sense of failed liberal policies is just palpable everywhere you go. You can feel it as you walk through the tranquil greenery of Boston Common.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's evident on Martha's Vineyard where soft, gentle breezes waft through the saltwater air like a lover's caress. It's alive in the lush fall foliage that dots the gentle hills with vibrant splashes of crimson and orange and gold, like God himself was painting the landscape. I love it here. This is the most beautiful place in the world. I can't live here. They hate me here. I want to live here all day long. They won the World Series. I want to live here.
Oh, come on.
I want to live here.
Take it easy.
I want to live here.
I'm sure Crawford, Texas is just nice.
Have you ever been to Crawford? It is nothing but dust and dirt and more dirt and bushes and Secret Service and dirt. There's nothing. Nothing but dirt.
All right,
I like lattes, too.
Okay.
I love it.
Okay.
Hazelnut.
All right, buddy. Just let it out. Take it easy. It's okay. It's okay.
Hazelnut,
you're in a safe place here.
I want to stay here.
It's okay. You're all right? You're all right? Yeah.
Sodom by the sea, Mark. I'll be locked in my hotel room tonight with the Gideon Bible and a shotgun.
All right.
So this place
all
is
right.
Hell.
Well, and thank you for coming down.
All right, I'm leaving.
To see you. Lawton Smalls. Now to validate some of those facts.
Exactly.
About Massachusetts, Mark Riley joining us now here at the Someday Cafe is the mayor and our host in the city of Somerville, Mr. Mayor Joe Cordatone is here. How are you doing?
Yeah. Very good. Good morning.
It's nice to see you, man.
Welcome to Somerville.
It's great to be back.
You're in the Paris of Somerville, David Square.
I saw the Eiffel Tower. It's beautiful. Nice new addition. I live three blocks from here on Cottage Ave. Yeah, it was a whole different place.
And contrary to what he says, Jimmy Tingle did not build a square.
He did? I'm assuming there's a guy named Davis. No, am I wrong? Am I being shallow?
We still don't know which Davis it is. Really.
So let's validate some of those facts. You know, you really were the first guy to stand up for the gay marriage debate here in Massachusetts. And also, Canada has just made it legal for gay people to get married, which is great. Do you think we're going to see that now in this country at all, ever?
I don't know if you're going to see it everywhere.
Yeah.
But I tell you, we'll lead the way.
Okay,
we'll
good.
Lead the way. And that's about...
Yeah, when we spoke the other day, Mr. Mayor, we talked a little bit about the Big Dig, and we got a chance to see it kind of up close and personal. Has anybody in this area actually figured out what it is they're doing with this? I mean, I looked at the news last night. There's, like, leaks all through the concrete or something. What's going on with that?
That's a good question. You know, I remember listening to Tony V. I know he's going to be playing at Jimmy's later on, and he has a good skit he puts on about traveling down to Boston and, when they change the routes every day in the Big Dig. You know, want to get the Braintree today, and you say, no, you can't go there today.
Yeah.
I got to go to Braintree. No, I can't. You just can't go.
You have to settle for Saugus.
You have to settle for Saugus. So it's long. it's supposed to have traffic patterns. But in Somerville, as you can tell, we're a very densely populated urban area, number one in New England. And
yeah,
we get a lot of traffic,
it.
A lot of people.
It's locked up out there.
It
people
is.
Are clamoring.
Yeah.
But...
you know, hopefully it's going to help our community, but we'll wait and see.
We got over here pretty quick. And our, you know, our one of our editorial producers, Dan Passman, son of Lewis and Linda Passman, is like, you'd think that if the Big Dig had collector's cards, he would be collecting
all of them.
We're driving down. I haven't been in the city in like 6 or 7 years. We're driving down just by concrete sort of railings. He's like, oh, my God, it's the Big Dig. This is amazing. This is the most important, most complex construction project ever taken down by human people since the pyramids.
He gets excited about the cake, too.
So, well, you know, we got here, and they did give us there in Somerville. It was underneath 93 in East Somerville. We have a lot of those Jersey Barriers with the blue and gold tops on. We can give you one of those.
Dan Passman would love to take one of those home. We'll, if we can get it on the Amtrak, he'll take it home as a souvenir.
I'll put it into my wall calendar.
There you go.
The Big Dig wall calendar. So do you consider yourself, are you proud, and do you consider yourself what they call a Massachusetts liberal?
Hey, I'm proud to be from Massachusetts. I'm proud to be a kid from Somerville.
Yeah.
Call me what you want. We just try to treat everybody fair and everybody the same here.
That's important, because that's what the Democrats and the liberal agenda used to be.
Right.
And it seems to be happening. What do people have to do to get involved to make it happen? Because a lot of on the local government levels has been infiltrated by a certain type of narrow-mindedness and religious fanaticism. What do people got to do to get involved?
You know, I think you mentioned something when we talked yesterday about people sticking to core Democratic values. Let's take these debates head on. They want to talk about moral values and debate moral values,
mm-hmm.
Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about people being homeless. Let's talk about people not having jobs, not being able to feed their families. Let's talk about, I heard Senator Clinton, Hillary Clinton, speak shortly after the election. You know, here's a startling statistic. We're going to talk statistics. How come abortions have gone up in the last 4 years under the Bush administration?
Mm-hmm. I don't even understand how that
is. As a mayor here in an urban community, I'm dealing with suicides among youth. I'm dealing with drug addiction among youth. You know, and we're taking these head on. But let's put that in a moral context. What's moral about that when we turn our backs on that?
You know, right.
Where's the domestic agenda by the president?
It's not right. There is no domestic agenda.
He's taking head on. Let's not shy away. Again, I talked to you guys yesterday. I wasn't disappointed after the election. I was pissed off.
Yeah.
Let's take the fight head on.
That's
what
we. There you go. Pissed off and like a little paralyzed.
Yeah.
You know, just freaked out.
Mr. Mayor, what do you see as the future of progressive politics within the Democratic Party? You're obviously a Democrat. Do you feel the National Party is listening to you, or are they still listening to people that are talking about, well, we have to move more toward the center, we have, you know, that sort of thing?
Well, I think that was the problem in this election. They were sort of, well, we shouldn't debate on that, we should stay away, you know, we can't win that debate, we can't take it on. I think we have to sit back, take a look at ourselves, remember what our core values are, and just run with it.
You know, like, I'm looking at you, you're probably younger than I am, and at some point...
He's definitely younger than I am.
Do I have some weird idea of what I look like and who I am? I come to a college town, I'm like, oh, I'm still in college.
You wanted a test grad? Are you a test grad?
No, that was Passman.
Okay.
I graduated from BU.
Okay.
Yeah, that rarely gets an applause.
Oh, them.
People look at some sort of weird, you know, urban plight on the other side. All right. So now, what drove you to get into politics? Because a lot of people now think political action is hitting send on their keyboard. And I want to know what, you know, see, those are the political actors. But that's not really about politics. It's about like, oh, I wonder if they know this. I'm smarter than them. Here you go. What I want to know is what drove you to do it, because you obviously did it as a young man. You decided to get involved.
Two things.
Yeah.
I grew up in this city.
Yeah.
One thing that had a positive effect on me, I had a lot of good mentors, even athletics. I was involved in two things, the athletics and the arts growing up.
Yeah.
Teachers and mentors, and helped me make some right choices, and give me the opportunity to make right choices. And also... my family was in the nursing home business. We were in the senior healthcare business for almost 20 years.
I saw
the demise of that,
mm-hmm.
and I saw a lack of attention on youth service. So I just decided to run for the heck of it one day for Alderman, which is a city council, our legislative body in the city.
You're hearing that, people out there in the world of radio, run for Alderman.
Yeah.
That's right.
It
School
works.
Board.
And I actually coached high school athletics with a lot of mentors for about 20 years, up until the tough part of being mayor. I can't do it as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But those two things drove me to run, and I was successful enough. I tried to bring those issues to the forefront, and then being a member of the Board of Aldermen, I saw a lack of direction where I thought the city should be going, and I decided to run for mayor.
Wow, that's amazing, because like art and athletics, I actually used art to fight people in athletics. I took a whole different path.
Right.
There's still part of me, I'm 41 years old, I see a guy in a letter jacket, there's still part of me that goes, oh no, be cool.
Does the state of Massachusetts
fund the arts. I mean, the Bush administration and the people in Congress, if they'd have their way, certainly would defund a lot of the arts programs that go on across the country. How does the state of Massachusetts counter that trend?
There is some fun. And talk about the arts. You know, some of them, we're second per capita only to New York City for artists in the community. An incredible, you know, creative economy here in our city. We might not have a lot of transportation assets, other assets. It's one asset we're trying to capitalize on. Because, as a matter of fact, the city, we want to make a performing arts center down in Union Square, the other central business district in the city that Jimmy Tingle hasn't invaded yet. And, you know, there is some funding, not nearly enough.
What do you think of Howard Dean's statement the other day? Do you feel that he'd be good for the DNC? Are you supporting that?
Well, let's wait and see on that one.
What about MoveOn.org's accusation that Terry McAuliffe is just a corporate whore? What do you think about that?
I'll have to read the fine print.
Said like a true politician. You're getting the hang of it. Thank you, Joe Curtis.
Thank you, Mayor.
It's great seeing you. Thank you for having us in the city. I appreciate it. We'll be right back here from the Someday Cafe in a minute. You guys are great. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Yeah.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Good morning. We're back at 62 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're coming to you live from the Someday Cafe in Davis Square in Somerville, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
We're having a great time. Boston Coffee Cakes. There's literally 3,000 Boston Coffee Cakes still left, folks. If you're still out there driving around wondering where you can get free coffee cake, it's here. And there's plenty of the pumpkin coffee cake and some of the celery coffee cake left. See, some people after that, other people are open-minded enough to go, maybe there is celery coffee cake. There's no reason to judge. Now, folks, we're going to try a new bit here that we're reaching out to the radio audience and to you people here. But this is sort of a weird, isolated bit that I'm trying to reach directly into people's heads. Since I firmly believe that large sections of this country have been hypnotized by the right-wing propaganda machine, and since I believe no voter is beyond our grasp, I would like now to perform a healing dehypnosis on you. I am adept of the Bulgarian mesmerists who entrusted me with this secret wisdom that was transcribed from a cryptic text etched on the back of a lapis scarab that was planted deep inside the rectum of King Imhotep III. So if you dare, place your fate in the hands of me, Mark the Not All That Mysterious. Now close your eyes, except for that third one, and open your mind to the dehypnotizer. Relax. Breathe deeply and concentrate on the sound of my voice. Good. Now remove your pants. Good. Very good. Now, when we on the left discuss people in the so-called red states, we at times use harsh words like hicks, yokels, Jesus freaks, crackers, morons, or sheeple. And sheeple? Jesus, that's not even a real word. Remember, the Bush administration thrives on fostering fake differences between us, and so does our idiot media who love conflict even when it has no basis in reality. Through repeated use, these unfair words have hypnotized us into believing that people in the red states are all the same. Not true. Record numbers of red staters voted for John Kerry. Red staters can be sophisticated, intelligent, and as adept at cutting through the lies as we are. If you understand what I'm saying, stroke your left elbow. Good. It's great how many people did that in this room. This thing's really working, man. If we are to take back this country, we must start with the language. They're not bad because they like football or NASCAR. They're not stupid because they shop at the mall. They're dubious because they like Shania Twain, but I digress. Let's call them fellow Americans or freedom fighters. Because if you live in Alabama and voted for Kerry, that was an act of true rebellion. Or you can call them people who think like we do but are culturally disadvantaged because of where they were born and brought up by parents who have been unduly influenced by ingrained regional biases that have existed since before the Civil War. Okay, that one's a little long. Scratch that one. I will now count to three, and you will wake refreshed, alert, and receptive to the rest of the show.
which is the funniest program in the history of radio. Unless you're a hick, a yokel, a cracker, or a Jesus freak. And then you're probably sending an email petition right now trying to outlaw something I love. Now put your pants back on. Slowly. Careful. Good. One, two, three.
We're back!
I think that worked.
Yeah, I think it did.
You know what it reminded me of? Reminded me of something pretty creepy.
You've been hypnotized? You hypnotized people
when
like
that? When I came back to Boston to start doing comedy here again, and I was working at the Coffee Connection in Harvard Square, I got the only gigs I could get over a six-month period. You're a comic. Yeah. So this guy, so the only gigs I got were two nights a month opening for Frank Santos, an X-rated hypnotist. That's the only gigs that I could get, right? So I had to go. This guy was this weird, heavy guy. I never understood how hypnotists work. Yes. I guess you got to want to be hypnotized. Because this guy that just was like, you know, he was fat and sweating and sort of like, you know, he had medallions and stuff. You know, he's like, okay, now you're going to act like a stripper. Good. But people would do it. You know, and I'd sit there like, what is wrong? If you really start to think they have some sort of weird power, and they do over people that are stupid. And willing.
Wait, but are you sure they just weren't plants?
No, they really do it.
That's how these people, you know, heal people. That's how all of these faith healers work.
Yeah.
They get plants in the audience, of course. And then they get up and they, you know, they heal them with pleurisy or something like that.
No.
And, you know, these are people they pay in advance.
I feel there's some part of me that feels bad for making fun of Frank Santos. Isn't that weird? I mean, I did open for him. It was the worst gig of my life because you just have groups of kids thinking like, hey, come on, will you make her take her pants off, please? That's all they sit there for.
What does he run, like the Spice Channel now or something?
No, dude. It was just like this is a sad bit of business. I drove to Machias, Maine to open for Frank Santos. You think that's sad? I actually drove, what is it, like 24-hour drive up to the furthest points east in Maine. Those people are easily hypnotized. But it's pretty far away.
Now, you're
going to
make fun of people in Somerville when we get back to New York?
Absolutely not.
Nah.
No, I lived here in Somerville, and I had problems with some of the people, but for the most part, they were all right.
But yeah, only the people that you crashed your car into that time.
I'll tell that story next hour. So what else we got coming up? We got Barney Frank coming up?
Yes, Congressman Barney Frank and Ted Leo here.
That could be exciting.
Someday Cafe. We're in Somerville, Massachusetts. This is Morning Condition on Air America Radio.
Morning Condition on Air America Radio.
Big ball and toss and big ball and dance, big ball and toss and we dance around.
In the course of our nation's history, the people of Boston have rallied bravely whenever the rights of men have been threatened.
Boston became known as the hub in the colonial period.
Can you feel it out in Needham now? Out in Route 128.
Citizens, hear me out.
I don't know, Boston! Are you ready?
Hey, I'm Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, and we're broadcasting live from the Someday Cafe in Somerville, Massachusetts. It's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Morning geniuses, philosophers, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course everybody who came down here to the Someday Cafe here in Somerville. What a great morning it's been. Thank you, Boston Coffee Cake, for the 975,000 coffee cakes that you sent down. We built a house with them. It's been fun. Mark Riley is here.
Good morning.
Hey, we got Ted Leo coming up. We're going to speak to Congressman Barney Frank in just a minute. And wow, you know, I'm overwhelmed with emotion at the turnout we've had today.
This has been incredible, man.
It's been
just an incredible number of people. A lot of new faces here. You know, we got here, 4:30 this morning. We figured, oh, man, you know, it's quiet. There's nothing going on. We figured, oh, God, how many people? What are going to get? Five people? Next thing you know, there were like three or four people at, what was it, 4:45 waiting to come in here. I thought, you know, this is going to be a good day.
And they're still
and it
here.
It turned out to be a good day.
The people that were here at 4 in the morning are still here. And during the opening, the woman who was here at 4 in the morning actually screamed along with the tape of the scream.
Yeah.
Which maybe, you know, she's been up for a few days? Or
yeah.
Second finals.
You get that point where the reality, non-reality line kind of blurs a little bit. So let's not make our guests wait. Right now we have Congressman from the 4th District of Massachusetts, ranking Democrat on the House Financial Services Committee, Representative Barney Frank is here.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Barney. We really appreciate you coming down.
So what I want to ask right away is MoveOn.org has made a statement against Terry McAuliffe and the RNC chairman. He's basically called him a sort of corporate sellout who drove the Democrats into the hole. What do you think of that?
That is terribly unfair and counterproductive. I don't understand why they would say that. In the first place, he's not going to be the chairman after this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why people think they have to kind of, we talk about divisiveness and demonization. That goes two ways.
Yeah.
They ought to be able to disagree honestly with people. The notion that what did you say they drove the Democrats?
They just said that it was because of him selling out the party to corporate interests that that he was partly responsible for the loss.
Oh, I think that is gibberish.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what public policies they are complaining about. Certainly in terms of the Bush tax cuts and the other things that George Bush did do. Unduly favor the wealthiest people in the country.
Uh-huh.
The Democrats didn't sell out and weren't for that. So I don't understand it. I don't know. I mean, if they're complaining that he raised money, I wish we had a different system. I wish we had public financing. But
uh-huh.
I don't think it's a problem to try and get even in terms of financing. But I literally think, no, I don't know what corporate interest. I guess it is, we don't like McCarthyism. We shouldn't like it on our side either. To what corporate interest did they say he sold out, and what did he give them for it? In the first place, you should know the chairman of the Democratic National Committee doesn't make much public policy.
I'll tell you exactly what they said. This was on an email distributed by MoveOn.org. It said, quote, "For years, the party has been led by elite Washington insiders who are closer to corporate lobbies than they are to the Democratic base. But we can't afford four more years of leadership by a consulting class of professional election losers."
Oh, I think that is very unfortunate. In the first place, that kind of defeatism.
Yeah.
That's no way to kind of work. It's blaming yourselves. Is my mic off? Is that what I'm being told?
No.
It's blaming ourselves instead of the enemy. It's very unspecific about what they're talking about. I mean, I guess it's hard to have a Democratic national chairman who isn't a Washington insider unless he commutes from Nebraska. That would be kind of difficult to do. I guess I've been in Congress 24 years. I suppose I'm a Washington insider. Senator Kennedy has been in Congress since 1962. I don't think you get much more insight than that. Is he a sellout to corporate interests?
No, but exactly. Well, it's the business of politics. You have to be there.
Well, yeah, I think this kind of, frankly, it sounds like Newt Gingrich updated. Oh, you're a Washington insider. Some of the most important defenders of liberal values are Washington insiders, and that's how you get to do it. So I really think that's just this kind of McCarthyite charge without any substance to it.
Congressman, who would you like to see replace Terry McAuliffe?
My preference is a colleague of mine, Martin Frost, who was a victim of the Tom DeLay gerrymander.
He was a congressman. Yeah, colleague.
Martin Frost is a congressman from Dallas. He is a very able guy and very solid on his record on liberal issues. Representing Texas, representing Dallas, it wasn't easy. He was one of the major victims of this outrageous gerrymander that Tom DeLay pulled off. In fact, I think there's some value in that. In reminding people of the absolutely undemocratic manipulation in the Texas legislature that Tom DeLay engaged in. But one of the things I like about Martin Frost is he's concentrated on election issues. And what I think the Democratic National Chairman ought to be doing with the National Committee from now on through 2008 is focusing on our defense against electoral manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
We did better in 2004 than we did in 2000. But that's the main job. The chairman of the committee, unlike Move On, the chairman of the National Committee doesn't make policy. People, when we're voting in Congress, when we're deciding on issues, no one calls the Democratic National Committee. What you need to do is, I think, have them focus on electoral issues. And Frost has been an expert on that, and I think we do a very good job on it. Plus, I think it's a good idea to have someone from Texas who's shows that there's a national reach here. And there's one other absolutely superfluous, but I think politically useful advantage. His wife's a general in the United States Army.
Really?
And this notion that somehow we don't fully understand the military, when in fact it's this administration that has been mistreating people in the armed services in the worst possible way.
Yeah.
That would be helpful.
Yeah.
Let's get back. I'd like to get back to a second about electoral reform. What do you think needs to be done? What is the evidence of what's happened in this last election? And tell us where we got to go from here.
Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, and I was at a meeting last night that we had on
with
this, the drug reform group. There was this outrageous federal policy the Republicans put through, which says that if you've ever had a drug offense, you can't get student aid. That doesn't apply, by the way, if you were guilty of aggravated assault, driving under the influence, arson, rape. There's no automatic disqualification, but if you were caught with one marijuana joint, then you would be. It's an outrageous example of a distorted set of priorities. But the point I made is this. One of the problems we have, one of the biggest problems we have, is the disfranchisement of African-American males because yes. of this notion that says if you've ever been convicted, you can't vote in many states. And we know now that many of the laws are enforced in a discriminatory fashion. Drug laws are enforced in a very discriminatory fashion. If the drug laws were uniformly enforced, probably both George Bush and Al Gore would have been convicted earlier in their lives of drug abuse. Gore acknowledged having done things about the drug laws. Bush didn't acknowledge it, but that's par for the Bush course of not acknowledging things that he did wrong. But so one of the things we need to do, frankly, is to deal with this issue of the disfranchisement of African-American men, especially since it reflects to some extent some disparities in sentencing. Secondly, we need to, I would hope we would get national laws that would establish some protections. We made some progress. For example, provisional voting. It didn't go far enough. But if you notice, the final total in Ohio for Bush was cut by tens of thousands of votes because provisional votes were allowed. Now, before we had acted, that wouldn't have happened. This provisional voting, where if you are sent to the wrong place, they drop your name, somebody challenges you, you can still vote and it's later counted. I would go further with that. Finally, though, and most importantly, I think we need to do a very serious study of what's the best way to make sure that the machines are accurate and try to get that nationally done.
Here.
Thank you. We're talking to Representative Barney Frank. We're going to continue talking to Representative Barney Frank when we come back about Canada clearing the way for gay marriage and many other topics. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on the air and online at morningsedition.com from Air America Radio.
It's 21 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're here at the Someday Cafe in Davis Square. You can still come down. There's still coffee cake. There's not a lot of room here, but come down anyways, just so we know that you love us. Right now, we are in the middle of a conversation with Congressman Barney Frank, but I'm going to go ahead and do the Palm Pilot that was delivered to me last night in the middle of the night by Ramon, who was wearing a Red Sox uniform. So here is, you got his Colin Powell schedule for today. 6 a.m., wake up in Brussels. Note, what's this strange feeling? Oh, right, the respect of my peers. I forgot what that was like. 10 a.m., meeting, reach out to Europe seeking their help in Iraq. Note, ignore diplomats snickering and coughing obscenities into their fists. 1 p.m., discuss Bush's upcoming visit to Europe in February. Ask dignitaries if it would be okay if Bush rolled into East Capital City in a tank. And if that doesn't work, maybe he could just conference call Europe. 3 p.m., strongly deny Russian claim that the U.S. is interfering in the Ukrainian elections. Tell them, when would we have time? We've got our own elections to fix. Hello? 5 p.m., observe Human Rights Day. Note, this differs from the usual Bush administration policy of overlooking Human Rights Day. 7 p.m., choose title for tell-all memoir. How about this? A Man Among Morons. Scapegoat Like Me. Or Lies I've Heard and Told. That got a nod from Congressman Frank. 10 p.m. Ponder possible career options. Run for governor of New York or move to Paris and play jazz. Slight smile.
There you go.
I'm not expecting big laughs, but the acknowledgement was nice.
So, Congressman Frank, let's talk about the Canadian High Court. It seems to have cleared the way for it to become legal to be gay and get married in Canada. Now, what implications does this have on our, you know, confused and angry culture of hate and denying people human rights? How do these people within this culture respond to this, knowing that it's obviously okay?
Well, of course, we've already proven that in Massachusetts. Same-sex marriages have been going on in Massachusetts since the 17th of May, and I think it is now clear, contrary to all the nonsense that was preached, the only heterosexuals in Massachusetts who have been affected by the onset of same-sex marriages are a few people who live next door to a couple of lesbians and had to buy them a present. other than that, there is... And this is often the case with anti-discrimination. And I've seen this, I remember this in 1976 when we had a referendum for an Equal Rights Amendment dealing with gender discrimination against women. We did it with the Americans with Disabilities Act. Certainly it happened with race. Every time we propose a measure to protect some group against unfair discrimination, the opponents say, look, we don't object to these people, although sometimes they're lying when they say that, but they understand they can't come right out and say, we don't like these people, to hell with them.
Yeah.
So they say, if you do this, though, it'll be terribly chaotic. And they predict all these terrible consequences. And then, inevitably, we go ahead, we implement the policy in some cases, and there were zero negative consequences. I mean, people ought to go back and read what Jerry Falwell had to say about how terrible it would be to protect people with disabilities, and Pat Robertson, if we passed the ADA. And it, of course, had no negative effect on most people and was enormously helpful to them. So what will happen in Canada is this. There will be same-sex marriages in Canada. After a couple of years, it will be very clear, as it is already in Massachusetts, that allowing two people who are in love to become legally responsible for each other, as well as emotionally committed, has literally a stabilizing effect on society, not a negative effect on anybody. And it will be harder for those against same-sex marriage to scare people against it. See, I think there are two groups who are against same-sex marriage. A small group, the leaders, my colleague, Congresswoman Marilyn Musgrave, Falwell, Robertson, the other nuts, they don't like gay people. And it's a very simple point. If you don't like one gay person, then the notion of two of us together makes you really crazy. So, I mean, that's all it is. Most Americans, I think, are not homophobic. They've discovered that thanks to people coming out and saying, oh, yeah, well, that's okay. But they've heard the governor of Massachusetts, they've heard clergy people, they've heard the president, respectable people supposedly, make these predictions that if you allow two men in love to marry, it'll be terrible. And they don't know that that isn't the case. They don't want to take the risk. As we are able to demonstrate that all those arguments are nonsense, they change their position. In Massachusetts, if we'd had a referendum on same-sex marriage a year and a half ago, I think it would have lost. I think if we had it today, it would have won. Remember, people should understand this. And let me quote my colleague, Jim McGovern, Congressman. So the only state that voted on same-sex marriage this year was Massachusetts, because we're the only state that has it. The other states voted on people's fears of same-sex marriage. They lost because people were afraid. But in Massachusetts, where we've had same-sex marriage, the verdict expressed in our legislative election was, hey, okay, who cares?
And these people, they keep trying to frame it as a moral issue, but this is really a civil rights issue. This is a human rights issue.
Well, it's a moral issue. I think to tell two women who have been in love and who live together and are contributing to society that their love is somehow unworthy of legal recognition and that they're going to not be treated the same as others, I think that's immoral. I think morality
right.
consists of treating people fairly.
Congressman, I know we've got a very little bit of time left with you, and I wanted to try and get you to sort out a couple things about Social Security, because President Bush is talking about allowing people to invest some of their Social Security money into, private retirement accounts. Now, before the election, he said he didn't say anything about having to go into HOC to do this. Is it $1 trillion that he's going to have to borrow, or is it $2 trillion?
Well, it depends. That depends on what percentage of your Social Security payment he allows to be put into private capital. People should understand this is part of an overall approach by George Bush. George Bush and the people with him, we have the most conservative administration of power, the most conservative Congress since Calvin Coolidge, and I mean that quite literally. These people thought Herbert Hoover was a little bit too interventionist because of the Depression. And their view is that the way to solve the problems of this country, the way to get better, is always to follow one rule. Remove any restrictions on capital. Get rid of environmental regulations. Break the unions. Don't have consumer protections. Don't tax capital. They really want to change the tax code so all of taxes are paid by the work that people do and are paid for, and no taxes accrue to people who have saved money and have invested and there. This is their, partly their Social Security argument. But it depends on what percentage, and it is more likely to be $2 trillion. And by the way, it's very odd that they're saying is, oh, well, we're going to borrow $2 trillion, but it really doesn't count as borrowing because it's going to take care of the debt that we owe to Social Security recipients. But that debt's not on the books now. So if you're going to take the $2 trillion and say, that's just reducing the debt that we owe, then you got to put much more than that on there. I mean, it's a total sham. And it's part of their view that basically says, well, they call it the ownership society.
Right.
Calling it the ownership society is a way to assuage your guilt yeah. at following public policies that only help rich people.
Thank you very much. Congressman Frank, for being here.
Yeah,
it's great to have you. We'll be back with Ted Leo. Stick around. It's 34 past the hour. Welcome back. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition, coming to you live from the Sunday Cafe in David Square.
Yeah.
The man with the hooded sweatshirt and the wool beanie approaches me again, hopefully not to hurt me. No, just to go to the bathroom. Hey, we really want to thank the people here from Progressive Talk 1200 and 1430 who set us up here. Let's give them a round of applause.
Yeah.
Maggie, Steve, John, Chris, Joe, Shailene. We got Justin. We got our guy, Randy, is on our website posting pictures right now at morningsedition.com. If you want to make sure that this is actually happening, there's really 900 people here. Or at least close to that. Right now, it's my pleasure to bring up this guy who I've worked with before. Where was that? We worked at the South Pond, Brooklyn.
Yes.
For
the
Kerry Rally.
Council for Kerry thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. Ted Leo is here, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Ted Leo stands, the pharmacist.
Yeah, they're sleeping.
Are they all sleeping? Where are you guys playing tonight?
We're playing down in Philly tonight at the First Unitarian Church.
Yeah, are you going to drive down in a van?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Welcome to my life.
Can't we fly you down or something?
Sure. Yeah, you can, actually, if you want to.
Well, we'll take a collection. You know what we can do for you if you want coffee cakes?
Yeah, I'm vegan.
You can't eat. You're vegan?
Yeah.
Completely?
Completely, yeah.
Oh, take it easy. Okay, well, good for you. I'm not going to hurt anyone's feelings.
There you go.
But I ate red bones that night. Did that do anything for you? I had a full rack of pig and some beans.
I had some dry grape leaves at the Middle East.
Who's winning this fun battle? Uh-huh. All right. Not to, you know, each to their own, but I have to say I did enjoy the rack of pig.
Did you have to say that?
What?
You have to say that?
No, I didn't have to. You know, it's wrong as a lapsed Jew to be eating pig ever,
right.
But I do. But thank God my cousin Jane is here and has forced me and coerced me to come eat latkes and matzo ball soup for lunch.
There you go.
So that will erase the pig, won't it? But not the sin of 40 years of life, unfortunately. So you come from around here, Ted?
No, I don't. Okay. I'm from Jersey, but I lived up here for a few years.
Where'd you live, around here?
I didn't live in Davis, but I dated someone who lived in Davis for a while. So.
You dated a Davis Square girl?
Yeah, and I lived in Chinatown. Actually.
How far back are we going here?
96.
Oh, yeah, 98. Sure. I have those smears of calendar time as well.
Yeah.
90s. Right. 90s.
So of course, I should mention that we're still dating, so it's not, you know.
Oh, so it's
not a bad thing.
It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess the real question is, what are you waiting for?
No, actually, I should mention then also that we're actually married.
No. Oh, there you go.
Thanks. I just didn't want to, you know.
That always gets a round of applause. Yeah. No, except for the few people that are like, oh, swear, poor guy. He's in trouble.
Yeah.
So did you start playing around here? Or did you?
No, I've been playing music since I was in high school in like the late 80s, pretty much.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now, I've seen you perform. I haven't seen you with the pharmacist, but like I said, we work together. And no, I've never seen as intense a performer as you solo guitar playing.
Thanks, man.
It was mind-blowing. Because you played a song from my past that you told me you're going to do it.
Yeah.
Because I've been misquoting what the song is. I'm not going to tip it.
Okay.
I didn't remember the name of the song, though. Yeah. I did see that band three times.
Really? I just saw them this summer at
for the first time?
Yeah, the Tweeter. Yeah.
We're talking about Rush, and I'm not proud.
Yeah.
No, the world is ready for
that's
Rush.
What?
You
how
know?
Old are you, dude?
I'm 28.
25, I'll be 26 in a week.
So you came to Rush later, you know.
I came to Rush until I was like 4th grade.
All right.
You don't understand. I don't get it. Like,
we understand, man. Like, we understand.
It's cool. 4th grade, you must have scared your parents. This guy just said he was into Rush since 4th grade. He's 20 what?
25, 26 in a week.
Man, I'm just barely understanding what Rush means. You know? I'm 41 years old, but I had friends who were fans of Rush, and not unlike anyone in high school. They're like, we're going. So I ended up seeing Rush like 4 times in high school. I saw Ted Nugent 3 times, which I haven't recovered from.
Wow.
I saw Van Halen on their first tour.
Wow.
But threw up through most of the show and missed it. And who else did I see? I saw AC/DC. This is a sad story. I saw AC/DC on their first U.S. tour with Bon Scott. They were opening for Journey.
I was
14 years old. Sad truth about that story, I was there to see Journey.
Wow. You lost me, man.
No, I know. Because I wasn't turned out by AC/DC until I was 18. Do you understand?
Yeah,
the friends I was with, again, forced me to see Journey.
I understand.
But, you know, nothing ever resonates about who are the bands that influenced you the most when you were a kid?
When I was like, my dad actually took me to see Adam and the Ants when I was like 10.
Really?
Yeah.
Your dad did?
Yeah.
Did he know what he was going to?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah.
Was this Adam during the full-on pirate period or what?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And,
thanks, Dad, for screwing up my mind sexually for the next 20 years of my life.
Yeah. And, I went to see, he also took me to see Run DMC in 1983.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got to give some props.
That was sort of sad. I just immediately, when he said Run DMC, I said, what? What is that about? So, who else?
Yeah.
Your favorite song?
Okay, the alpha groups for me are like the kind of like late 70s, early 80s punky bands like The Clash, you know?
Yeah.
And The Jam, and some American stuff, The Minutemen, and
Squeeze.
Yeah, I love Squeeze, of course. Yeah, and a lot of DC hardcore from the era. And,
you know. The Minutemen were great. You're a Mike Watt fan now?
Yeah. Not as much as Zip It. Yeah.
How about the Stooges?
The Stooges. Stooges are great.
Yeah, you guys are very young, or I'm very old.
I listened to your record. What's the name of your record again?
The new one's called Shake the Sheets.
Kicks ass.
Thanks.
Can I say that? I'm sorry, Chris. You might have to dump that. Can I say that?
No, you can say that.
I'm new to this radio thing. So we're going to be back with Ted Lieu. He's going to play some songs after this on AMF Radio. Here we go, 45 past the hour. Mark Miller with Mark Riley.
Yeah.
Aaron Morning Sedition coming to you live from Somerville, Massachusetts. Progressive Talk 1200 and 1430. Thank you for hosting us. We're going to bring this thing in.
Yeah.
And see the landing lights now. Right now, Ted Lieu is going to play a song from his new album with his band, The Pharmacist. It's called Shake the Sheets is the name of the record. And then he'll follow with a song that's going to surprise some people. Ted, what's the name of this one?
This one's called Me and Mia.
All right. Right on.
Can I get a little more guitar in this one?
As I was walking through a life one morning, the sun was out, the air was warm, but I was cold. So I must have looked a half a person to tell the tale in my own fashion. It was only then that I felt whole. Do you believe in something beautiful and beautiful? And me and Mia, Anne and Anna, we've been unkind. Do you believe in something beautiful that's gonna be beaten? Slowly, 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 don't you gain a little self-control? I see it in your eyes, I see it in your spine. We call you friends, cause we've forgotten what it's like to eat what's not.
get better. And even the days I know that bad. And after a week of fighting, small and small, it seems the right thing. But do you believe in something beautiful that can be better? Fighting for the smallest, go to gain a little self-control. Won't anybody here just let you disappear? Now, doctors know your mom and dad, but me and me and Anna know how hard you try. Don't you see it in my eyes? Bourgeois social angels telling you you've got to change. Don't have any idea, they'll never see so clear. But don't forget what it really means to hunt. It's like when you don't really need a summer diet for a cause, but that don't make it yours. And even the nuts, they could get better.
Go on.
Ted Leo, that was great.
Thanks, man.
That's from the new record, Shake the Sheets, by Ted Leo and the Pharmacists. What did you say? It was having great.
I said, go on.
Come on.
You say that to all your music.
No, I don't. We've only had two.
All right, that's good.
No, but that was nice. It was the dynamics. I love dynamics in
this dude.
That's only because I was losing my voice, so I had to bring it down. No, I appreciate it. Maybe I'll do that from now on.
Great. Just lose your voice all the time. Mm-hmm. Operate at that scraping vocal intensity. So let's do this other one.
Yeah.
Blow this guy's mind over there.
We're practically in Canada anyway, right?
Yeah, we're almost in Canada. Okay. We're all heading there, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, so, we're staying here. We'll stay here.
Hopefully we won't, you know, I won't get any publishing suits over this, but Spirit of the Radio.
We got time for one more. You feel like it?
Another song?
Yeah.
Sure, man.
You want to hear another song? Let's do it.
All right. This is
Yeah, okay, you got it. This is kind of an Irish wake of sorts. It's called Same as Me.
Thank you for coming down here, Ted.
Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. The new album is Shakes the Sheets, Ted Leo and the Pharmacist. You can get that where all high-quality CDs are sold.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. So this has been great. Again, I want to thank, I'd like to thank the Someday Cafe and David Square for having us.
Yeah.
I want to thank Progressive Talk 1200 and 1430 for helping us out. Shailene, Maddie G, Steve, Joe, John, Chris. We got Randy on the web, Dan Patrick, Son of Lewis, and Linda Paxton of New Jersey.
Yeah.
Kent the Colonel Jones, Jonathan, yeah. Clutch Larson, Mark
Vanessa
Riley on my right.
Over there.
Vanessa's here too.
Yeah.
The guy, the Rush fan, who's also a big fan of yours, his ears are bleeding. Something just gave way.
Hot licks at 8 in the morning.
The core of his being. Wow, man, this has been great. I'm going to be at the Off-Broadway Theater tonight at Jimmy Kimmel's right down the street. You can go to jtoffbroadway.com. Right now, that's the Liberal Agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders for today. One, suggest we actually paint the state blue. Two, replace Patriot Act with New England Patriots Act.
Yahoo.
Including the Tom Brady bill. Three, Dukakis and Kerry in 2008. Anyone? Maybe. Four, demand that the U.S. establish full diplomatic ties with Red Sox Nation. And five, when talking about Bush in Boston, use this phrase. One curse down, one to go. How about that?
All right, Riley. Man, we've had a ball here today.
It's been great, Mark Riley.
It's been wonderful. Listen, on Monday, we got a very special guest, Jeff Jarvis. He's going to tell us why the FCC isn't getting as many complaints as you might think they are here on Air America Radio. Have a great day.
Thank you so much.